Welcome to Wildlife Outdoors with your host, Russell and Jose. If you have a passion for conservation of the outdoors, or you're enjoying a calming hike in the mountains, an exhilarating kayak trip on the river, feeling a fish on the end of your line, cooking on an open flame in a primitive campsite, or stalking big game, just waiting for the perfect shot, you're in the right place. So put on your boots and polarized sunglasses and come along for the ride.
Welcome back to the podcast, guys. We've got another episode for you today. This time we are joined by special guest Hal Beats. He is a good buddy of ours. He's the crazy Hawaiian. He used to guide up in Ohio. He's a steelhead guide. And now he lives here in Hot Springs, Arkansas, originally from Hawaii. So he has all sorts of crazy stories to tell, and he's a blast to have. So we're happy to have him on. So welcome, Hal.
Thanks, guys. Much mahalos.
So sorry I'm a little late, guys. I decided to go do some spooky stuff. So, you know, normally we try to record at 7 o'clock, and here it is, 9:45, barely hopping on. So I went and did, you know, these haunted tours downtown Hot Springs. So I'm a little late. Sorry about that. But it was a good time. And, you know, if anybody isn't from Hot Springs and decides to come Hot Springs or come through, I definitely recommend to go to those haunted tours downtown. They typically do it at night. Their first tour is like 8 p.m. So you get to learn a little bit about the history of Hot Springs and, you know, some hauntings and hotels and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. So
speaking of, you and Howard touching a little bit on the haunted / spooky Hot Springs history. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So there's a former Army Navy hospital here in Hot Springs. It's on national land. And I never knew what the building was. It's always kind of been like eerie, and I've heard people say that it was an asylum and stuff like that.
I broke in
but
there.
But what it was. Oh, you did?
You broke in there.
I did my own adventure ghost hunt with my buddies.
That's it's awesome. Really haunted. Yeah, me and Ruth were just talking about that. It seems crazy.
Yeah, it's super haunted. So go on there, Russell. But
yeah, and so there were when we're going through the tour, that's the first building they talk about. And it's awesome because right now it's misty outside. It's like a three-quarter moon, so you got the moon coming through. It's misty, it's rainy, there's a lot of fog. It's up on the hill, so there's fog over the top of it. It was real cool. Like, we picked the perfect time to go to it. And we're standing across the street from it looking at it, and you could just kind of see it. And then the guy's in front of us talking. And he's saying that whenever they opened it in the early 1900s, that everybody was super excited for this hospital to open because it was the first Army Navy hospital, the first like VA hospital to be opened. And the thing that was most exciting about it was all the new technology and all sorts of stuff. So everybody's like, okay, well, it's this newest thing. So people were excited to come. So they would actually talk about whenever they're trying to recruit people into the Army and Navy, saying that you can come here, you can get your medical care here, you can stay here while you're getting medical care. It's going to be free of charge. Like, they're putting all this stuff out, all this information about saying how great this hospital is. But the single thing that made it stand out from anywhere else in the entire world is it was the world's first refrigerated morgue. So they had a morgue in the basement that was the first refrigerated one. So typically what they would do at that time at a morgue is they would have ice blocks, and that's how they would cool the bodies. So it was such a big deal. Like, people would come in and they knew that if they did die, they would be taken care of. But at the same time, it was the newest, biggest hospital. So people didn't come expecting to die. But if they did, they knew that they were going to, you know, be taken care of. The issue with that was they were bringing in all these soldiers from overseas that were being exposed to other sicknesses and diseases that they didn't know about here. So then they started having what they would call kill outs, where they would bring an infected person in and everybody on the floor would die. And so they would have hundreds and hundreds of people coming in and dying. Like, in a month, there'd be a couple hundred people that would die. So the morgue couldn't keep up with it. So what they started doing is they started going and putting them lower in the basement and just wrapping the bodies in numerous sheets and leaving them there. And they would have to go through the process because it was, you know, all government stuff that this person actually did die. The military would have to say this person did die. Then the government would have to come and say this person did die. And then the family would have to recover the body. Well, sometimes that would take 6, 8, 9 months. So these bodies would be there unrefrigerated in the basement of this hospital until the body got recovered. And so I think he said it was like in the mid-1900s, maybe 1950-something, an inspector of the military had come in and had to do, you know, his safety inspection and stuff like that. And he said he was walking through ankle deep red sludge in the basement.
Oh, you're talking about the
decomposing
hall.
Bodies.
You're yeah. talking about the
and
hall.
So, yeah. So they shut it down. They said, you know, this is, it's not sanitary. So they ended up shutting down the hospital. It was no longer a hospital. It was closed for a few years and then it ended up becoming a rehabilitation center. And so the myth that it was an asylum is half and half true, because there were people that were coming for mental rehabilitation, but it wasn't like an actual asylum. There were just mental patients there, and physically was, disabled people and stuff asylum. Like that were coming. Yeah, dude. So, yeah. but they're saying due to all the deaths there, that there it's haunted, and it's a building, and it's been closed. So there, it was a rehab center up until I think 2019. And then they moved elsewhere, but the building has lead paint and asbestos and stuff like that. And so they don't have any plans of restoration for it, which sucks because it's a prime real estate location. It's on national park property. It's a gorgeous building. They call it some people call it the Death Castle just because a lot of people die there in it, but it looks like a castle. Like it's a gorgeous piece of property, gorgeous building. But there's no plans of renovation due to, you know, how much it would take to actually do it, which sucks. So if anybody out there listening like knows a billionaire, like you should just like kind of send him the hot springs and have him do it.
I would have bought that hospital and if I had all the money in the world, brother.
Right. Well, the issue is with it is it's government, like federal property, but the state of Arkansas leased it originally for like a dollar or something like that. Yeah. And so they were just kind of like grandfathered in, like they're kind of the owner, although it's federal property. And the state of Arkansas doesn't want anything to do with it because, you know, it's haunted and it's going to cost so much to uptake. But then the federal government's like, no, that's y'all's building. And so it's like a power struggle between the two. So, yeah, it's just kind of one of those things just withering away, unfortunately. But pretty interesting stuff.
It's been there for years, you know, and I did a lot of research. I did a lot of ghost bustings. And so I found some crazy stuff in there, man. It's nuts, though. But the reason why that hospital was actually built was because to help the vets. But then they started opening it to the public. And the number one disease that killed a lot of people besides TB, that was all a TB hospital, was venereal diseases. No, smallpox,
oh,
too.
Really?
But the number one was venereal diseases from the military.
That's crazy.
Gonorrhea, VD, syphilis, all those bad stuff. Yeah. Because they didn't have cures, and they used to think the water, if you bathed in it and drank it, it would clear it. Well, if anybody's have herpes, I mean, I don't have herpes, but I know people have herpes, but it goes away and then it comes back. But if you don't treat it, it can really damage your body and kill you. And that was a main focus when it was going on. So they would have revolving patients. But he's right. That hallway is the sludge hallway, you know, and it's super, super spooky, super haunted. If you're not a believer, I'll tell you to get in there and you'll believe.
So, that's freaking crazy.
Yeah. But I mean, Hot Springs is a huge, huge melting pot for the supernatural. I mean, a lot of people don't know about the Indians that used to live here, the Washtenaw Indians. You know, if you drive down Central.
And the Choctaws.
Yeah. If you'll see the mural of the Indians on the one wall right by the hat shop, the reason why they put that there is because when they were developing the town, they moved all the graves. And it's actually right behind Hot Springs. They just uplifted and moved it. So once in a while, downtown Central, if you're out there in the middle of the night, you'll see Indians in the trees. That's what they say. I haven't seen it, you know. Seen a lot of smoky stuff, but I haven't seen the Indians.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that still work or live down there. We'll talk about the Indians in the trees. It's because of the settlers that they came in. Yeah, it's super, super nuts. You just got to get into your deep resources if you're going to get into the supernatural, especially down there. Yeah.
Yeah, they were saying that the Hot Springs was the Indian burial ground, and then when the settlers came in, that West Mountain was the burial ground.
No, and just shoved them over there.
Yeah. I was like, that's freaking crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, if y'all come to Hot Springs, y'all should definitely take the tour. For those of y'all that are listening that aren't from here, or if you're from here and have never been, I mean, I've been here 4 years and had never been. So it was pretty cool. But
if you don't mind getting a little jail time, I'll go grab a rock and you can take my tour.
dude, they should do tours of the Velda Rose and of the hospital. Like, dude, there's all those abandoned buildings that they just, I bet they could make a killing doing tours. The problem is, you know, it's not legal because of all the safety hazards and stuff like that. So,
yeah, it's also a lot of private property, too. Like, you know, the Diablo houses up there on Washita Avenue, the three painted houses, that has to go all the way back to New Orleans. La Verrose, you know, the voodoo witch. You guys have heard of her, right? She's also a musician. Did you know that?
I did not.
So if you were a musician trying to make it big, you'd go see her and she'll give you the passageway. She's came up to Hot Springs many times during the settlers. And those are her three houses. And she told people those three houses will always be different color of paint. You'll never paint them the same. Until this day, one's red, one's blue, and one's yellow. That was her brothel house.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. See. And if you go to the red house, you'll see the picture of the devil. That's supposedly her stamp mark on that. And what's also funny is that every 5 years, that those houses always sell. The original owners can never stay there. They always sell it every 5 years. And last time I was up there about a couple of weeks ago, I saw a for sale sign up in the freaking yard. So you can stay at that house. It's a bed and breakfast. So really? If you ever want. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, super no, high. I'll stay away from the demonic stuff. I'm good.
Yeah, do a little cattle and some stuff. Play a little punk rock or death metal. You'd be all right, you know?
Right.
So go to Flat Jacks, hang out with, you know, those little old rockers, you know?
Hey, Fat Jacks is fun. I like Fat Jacks.
Yeah. Big hair bands. That's what they play.
Yeah. I like it there, though. They got some good food. Actually, Jose, you've been to Fat Jacks, right? We went with your parents, didn't we?
Did we?
I think so. It's at the end of downtown.
Yeah.
They had like the Cajun food and the good drinks.
Yes, we did. Yeah. That was a cool place. I remember that.
Yeah. Fat Jacks is pretty cool. Fat Jacks is really cool. So, I mean, it's super haunted. A lot of stuff around town is haunted. You just got to do your research, you know? I mean, the mob used to play here, if that tells you anything.
Yeah, that's what they're saying, that Al Capone used to rent. He would lease out the whole fourth floor of the Arlington, and they think he stayed in room 433, and that gave him the perfect eye to look at what is now the Ohio Club, because that used to be his club.
That was
and
always the Ohio's Club.
Connecting up between. Yeah,
he named that club Ohio's Club.
That's, oh, really?
Yeah. The reason why is because Capone could never get into Ohio. So he named that club the Ohio's Club because of all the other family that lived in Ohio, like Cleveland, Cincinnati area. Mm-hmm. So when they would come to Hot Springs, it was considered a family peace spot. The only club that was available for slot machines and stuff like that at the time was the Ohio's Players Club. So if you're part of that family, it was like, piss on you, man. I'm watching you at your club.
I see. That's crazy.
And that place is
super freaking awesome.
Yeah, have you ever gone in there, Russell? Have you guys eaten there?
I've never eaten there, but I've been there for work before.
Oh, yeah. You see all the pictures on the walls?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did they ever tell you about the Blue Ghost?
Nuh-uh.
Dude, you got to go get their burger, their American burger. It's freaking mammoth, man. I mean, it's good burger. Got to come back up here and you'll take it out. I'll take you guys there if you go. And you'll see a picture on the wall. And it's a blue ghost. That's one of the major ghosts that still haunts the Howard's Players Club. Supposedly, it was a pushed over victim of a lady when it got raided, that she fell off one of the stairs and broke her neck. And she still haunts that. And any way you go to the bathroom towards the back, people get pushed. That's where she supposedly died. But they see her.
That's crazy.
It's wicked crazy. I know the bartender's there, too. And they tell me every night. They always have to take one shot of whiskey and lay it on the table. If they don't, the bar will be all screwed up next morning.
No shit.
Damn. Yeah. It's crazy.
Sounds like the lady's an alcoholic. That's an alcoholic ghost.
She was, she partied in the night forte.
Right.
She hung around mobsters. I mean, yeah, you kind of see what she did.
Right.
Yeah. But the blue lady still haunts it. Yeah. It's nuts, dude. So you guys got to come up. Well, I'll take you out there and get your burger. The burger's really good. You know,
I've heard it. I don't remember what. There was another thing that somebody told me that was really good from there. But I know that I've been told about the burger as well. There was a couple things I got told I need to try, but I've never been there to eat. So I need to.
Yeah, you got to go. The burger's really good. And I always, when I first dated my wife now, Miss Meg, that was one of the things we did is go find all the spooky stuff around this time of the year. We would go to the Howard's Players Club, and she knows everybody in town. That's how I know the bartenders. And they would always say, you really want to see some spooky ghosts? I'll tell you where to go. And we'd be like, you know, hammered. You know, that's what we're doing, getting hammered. And we're going into these weird places. Like, you know where Maximilian's Theater is? Downtown? The magic guy?
Yeah. Maxwell Blade or whatever?
Yeah, Maxwell Blade. Yeah, that dude.
Yeah.
He's funny, dude. His place is super haunted. But before he was down there, you know, we would go in there and sneak in with a bunch of people because they used to have the horror theater down there. Mm-hmm. Every Halloween, they'll play the horror theater. We would always break in there and do our little lights and stuff. But we've seen some weird stuff downtown that a lot of people don't ever see, you know. But you only know if you talk to the locals, man.
Yep. That's how you find the best stories.
I'm just married to a local.
right.
Yeah. So, and there's a lot of paranormal activity people that come to Hot Springs because they believe the crystals, the water, the limestone, the underwater flow is a tribute to all the supernatural. So it's crazy.
Didn't that ghost show on Discovery Channel come here?
Yeah, and do a bunch of stuff downtown? Came. Yeah.
Or Ghost Adventures came. Or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, they all came down. They stayed at the Arlington. You know,
I see.
The Majestic.
Yeah, they said there's some crazy stuff that happened in the Arlington. They said, so I'll make this one quick, but the Arlington actually used to be across the street from where it is now, not across Central, but across Fountain Street. And it was originally a wooden two-story hotel, and it burned down. Wooden buildings burned down. And so they rebuilt it. It was a brick structure, and they're thinking, you know, this is the early 1900s. Like, well, brick building won't burn down. So they rebuilt it in brick. Well, it burned down. The brick stood, but everything else burned out. And then, but 2 years before that is when it got declared national park property. So then the government's like, you can't rebuild. Like, it's burnt. You need to find somewhere else to put your hotel. Well, where the current Arlington is, there was another wooden hotel that was still there that hadn't burned down. And the people from the Arlington kept going over there and asking to buy the property. And they're like, no, I mean, it was an elderly couple, and they loved their hotel, and everybody else loved the hotel, and there was, you know, nobody had anything negative about it, so they wouldn't sell. Well, the Arlington people kept going and going and going and offering more and more money. Well, one day they were having, it was like a town hall meeting or something like that, and they wanted it to be known that everybody was around that they were going to offer them 10 times what the value of it was. So they came to him and said, you know, we'll offer you 10 times what the value is. I don't remember what the dollar amount was at that time. And they said, your money is never going to buy this hotel. We don't want to sell. We love our hotel and we're going to keep it. Well, not long after the hotel burned down. And then there were signs posted, and the Arlington people somehow, I guess they knew somebody in the government, and somehow they ended up with a deed for that property. And they also had a slip of paper that said anything that was on that property is trash and cannot be touched. So then in the middle of the night, they're taking vehicles out there and just loading everything up and hauling it off. Well, there was numerous witnesses that saw that some of the quote unquote trash that was removed from the property were charred bodies from when they burned down the hotel. People died, and they were never published in the newspaper that people had died. There was never an obituary or anything like that. Was all kind of under the table stuff, and those bodies never got a proper burial. They just got thrown out with all the other stuff. And so they're saying that those six people that, which they claimed it was six people, that those are the ones that currently haunt the Arlington.
Freaking homeless people, bro.
Vagrants.
Vagrants.
But yeah, so they're saying that those are the spirits that still haunt the Arlington. But the Arlington is actually going through major renovations right now, and they finished the main entrance, and it's absolutely gorgeous. And so I think they're going to redo the whole thing the same style that did the main entrance. And if so, it's going to be freaking awesome when they're completed.
Yeah, if you go there Friday night, you can listen to the live band and get popcorn.
Really? I didn't know they had popcorn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's right there by the bar. They always have a live band. Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a place in San Marcos, Texas called Chances Are that always has popcorn, and it always makes you buy more alcohol. So it's a smart move.
Oh, is that why they sell popcorn? Yeah. I can never figure that out. But of course, I'm always pissed drunk when I'm in there.
Right. Yeah, it's salty. I used to go in for one drink, eat a couple things of popcorn, and end up having six. So.
Oh, yeah, smart guys, I swear. Yeah. Yeah.
But speaking of adventures and whatnot, so on November 4th, me and Ruth are going on a trip, and this is actually kind of what led to Hal being on this episode, is me and Ruth are going to go to the Cossetot, and we're going to go do this hiking trip. And it's I believe, 12 and a half miles one way. They said it's the most strenuous hiking trail that is in the Ouachitas. And they tell you to allot yourself 20 hours to complete a one-way hike for it. So we're going to go for a weekend and backpack the whole trip. It's going to be awesome. But I was over. So Hal works at Washed Outdoor Outfitters. And I went in there on my lunch break one day and was chit-chatting with him, telling him, you know, what the trip was that was upcoming. And he says that he's done the trip numerous times, not the trails, but the river. And he has some pretty spooky things that he's seen and experienced and talked to about there. So you want to tell us that story, Hal?
Yeah, I could tell you about the Cossetot. So I'm not going to drop my buddy's name because he's totally a non-believer, but he's a believer. I'll tell you, after the couple times we went out there, he's a believer. He won't tell you, but later on in the day, he will tell you he's a believer. He will go on with the story. So we're just going to say he's my buddy. So anyway, this was like 2015, 2014, somewhere around that time, almost 10 years now. But I still float the Cossetot. Cossetot is the most beautiful river out there I've experienced. One of the beautiful rivers in Ouachita. If you ever get the chance to do the Cossetot, do it. But do it smart. So I went up towards Bushy, and that's where we would go. That's the trail you're going to be taking. Bushy Creek, right? Is that right? Yeah.
So, I think it's Brushy Creek.
Brushy Creek. Yeah, I always call it Bushy, but yeah, it's Brushy Creek. There's Same a train thing. Track that runs right across the Brushy. It's no longer in use. So remember that train track. And that's where we put in. And then there's campsites as you float down the river. It's usually a two-day float trip for to get down to the National Center as soon as you pass the falls. Got to do it when there's low water. Smallmouth fishing is unbelievable. Like that? That's pretty cool, isn't it?
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, just really fabulous. Nice smallmouth. Awesome warm water species, too, as well. Caught some pretty nice fish out of there. So me and my buddy, we canoed it. You know, this is before I got into the real kayak scene. Canoeing was a big thing. So we canoed it. And when we got to Brushy Creek, paddled down, it just felt kind of weird. It was like early summer, kind of late spring. And the Cossetot always has a fog, no matter what time of the year it is. And there's always water in the Cossetot. You know, even though it's low, it's still deep in a lot of parts. But you're up there in a pretty higher elevation. But it just felt weird. This is like early morning when we kind of just told our buddy that's going to park the car down where our outtake was, which was Camp 2. So if you look at the Cossetot River, you'll see Camp 2. You'll see Camp 1 and 2. And we said, just park our car down there. We're just going to go for the nice haul. And we're just going to do maybe a two-day vent, you know, one night on the river. Gorgeous, gorgeous river. We're flowing, and the midday, we're catching fish. Everything's really cool. But do you ever get that really weird feeling that people are watching you? You know what I'm saying? And I'm not talking about, like, you know, the lokes over across the street, they're gangbanging looking at you. I'm just talking about, like, you're walking down the street and somebody's just watching. You look at everybody's window, every view, you get that weird feeling. So about that first day, we got that really weird feeling, you know. Even my buddy would say, like, jokes, like, stop looking at me, oh man, you're making me freak out. And I was like, do you get that feeling too? And he's like, yeah, man, it's kind of weird. He's an old Army vet too. So we used to always joke about that. And it was kind of therapeutical for him to do these trips. That's why I did it with him. So we kind of get early evening. I don't know. It was late lunch, you know. And we kind of come around this spot that we call Big Bend Rock. It's this big rock off to the left. Beautiful water. The water's crystal clear. And we see this kid. He looked like he had to be like 5 years old, 4 years. Probably up to your chest, not even that, you know, maybe up to your waistline. And he's standing on this rock, you know, and he's got these overalls on. And from a distance, we're like, you know, that's a kid. He's got this floppy hat on. They were like, that's kind of weird. And my buddy would be like, oh, no, man, the banjos are coming. You know, you're the canoe. And we just kind of started flowing by. And this kid's just standing on this rock, plain view. We went right by that rock, and he's looking right at us. Like you could go out there and touch him. And we just, like, kind of say, hey, what's up? You okay? And the kid just kind of followed us as we're flowing through. And we just kind of looked at this kid. Now, we could see his face and his, I mean, there's, you can't see through him. We thought it was an actual kid, but there's no access points there. So we're like kind of thinking like, it's kind of weird how this kid's in the middle of the woods, you know? And I was like, ah, it's kind of weird. So then we just kept on going, you know, didn't think anything of it. His parents are probably somewhere because out at the Cossetot, it's really podo. You don't know what you're going to find out there. You know, you'll run into some really interesting characters. There are good people. They're just interesting, you know?
Yeah.
Mountain people. So we thought that's part of the kid, you know? It wasn't hunt season or anything like that. We just thought he was coming down. So we get to our campsite, and it was right by beach two, you know, campsite two. We pulled up, busted out our tent, had a couple beers, made a really, really, I make a freaking bomb freaking Riverside dinner. So besides the iguana.
Hey, that iguana was good, man.
That was bomb. But anyway, so I was cooking chicken and we had some steaks, you know. And then my buddy, he was like, hey, man, I got to use the restroom. I'm going to go over the bushes. You know, we're not too far away from the tree line. Bright moon was out. He goes over there. And all of a sudden, I can hear him screaming like, holy shit. Just like jumping over rocks, flipping over stuff, coming back to the campsite, to the fire. And I was like, what's up, man? I saw a snake, saw a bear. And he was like, no, man, I saw that kid. And I was like, get the out of here, dude. You're joking, man. Have another beer. He was white, pale white. And he was like, no, I saw that kid. So we grabbed our flashlights. We went over there, thought this kid was in need of help. You know, we're a good distance from the Big Bend Rock. You know, we're really pretty far from that. So we don't know how that kid got down. Maybe he knows some backwoods trails or something, which I doubt it. So we're looking, we're calling out this kid, like, hey, kid, didn't see anything, nothing. And he goes, no, dude, how? He was right here. I was peeing on this tree, and he was standing right next to me looking at me. And I was like, man, was he really looking at you? I mean, how many beers did you have? He's like, man, hell, it's not that. I know what I saw. You know, as soon as I turned around, he was gone. And I was like, man, come on now. You know, and I believe the supernatural. But at that point, I'm in the middle of the woods. I don't know who's there. I'm not going to believe it because I know there's a lot of Podoke Mountain people there. So I didn't really want to freak out. So that night we slept, but we slept with the fire worn and we had our pistols on our hands. We're kind of scared, you know. We had one tent. Yeah. Yes, I did have a tent and I did sleep in a tent, Russell.
I know. That's surprising to hear. How does not camp?
Yeah, I gave that up in 2019. So we did that, you know, and then we just didn't get it. We didn't sleep at all. You know, we're just thinking about this kid. Early morning, we get up, make some breakfast really fast, push out the fire. We even debated leaving at night to go see if we could get help. But that'd be really risky on the Cossetot because we were in a canoe. There's no light out there and you don't know what's around the next side. So we start flowing back down. We get to our out point. We see our car. Nobody's around because we didn't see a soul, not a person. We didn't really fish as much as we usually do on that stretch. We're just kind of worried about this kid. So we jump in the car and we're like, hey, man, let's just go down to the visitor center. It's not that far, you know, because we're debating going to the police station. They could call in the police. So we head down there, get to the visitor station. And my wife's father is a superintendent for the state parks, and that's part of his region. You know, so he knows everybody. He knows everybody. He knows me. So this lady's over there. I'm not going to mention her name because she'll talk your ear off if she go in there, and you'll know who she is. She's an older lady. She's been there for like time, ever since the visitor center was built. So I go in there and I say, hey, this is what we saw on the river. Blah, 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 blah. We need to call the police. We need that somebody's out there, this kid. And we told them on the map. They literally looked at us and said, oh, yeah, that's the kid ghost, the little boy ghost. We're like, what? And he was like, yeah, how close did you get to him? And my buddy told him he was standing right here. I mean, he's like, oh yeah, he was probably watching you guys. Did you guys pass Bin Rock? And I was like, yeah, that's where they found his body when the train wreck was. And we're like, when was this? It was like 1930 or something like that. There's a big train that derailed a bunch of passenger kids. And one of those kids had fallen off some of the other bodies, but that was the only kid that died. And he still haunts that area. So every time we go fishing through Cal State, I haven't done it in a while, we'd always throw like an apple on Bin Rock. So when you come flowing around the Cal State, we'd throw an apple for the kid. Because that's what she said to do, is that he's looking for food. And we had a campsite, and he wanted to be with food. But that's I tell you right now, I've seen a lot of weird ghosts. That kid who felt like flesh and blood, if you could reach out and grab him. And you could pick him up and hug him like he was your own kid, but he was a ghost. So, and a lot of the people there don't talk about it because it will discourage a lot of the visitors from doing that flow or the trail. So, Russell, you got to hike that trail. You'll be going across Bin Rock.
To bring apples.
I'm going
to
bring an apple.
Bring apples. Just be aware, you know, he'll show himself and he'll pop up. I haven't seen that kid after that, but that's still always on my mind. But the last time I floated the Cost Top, maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, there was a bag of apples on the top of the rock. So I'm not the only one that saw the kid. So I was like,
that's
dang.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's so much nutrients here, a lot of information about the supernatural. The Cossetot is Indian River. That's what a lot of locals will tell you because there's so many trapped souls of the Indians and also the settlers, obviously, on that river. They actually made a movie in the 70s called Devil's Den. And it's about a whitewater, and it's about the supernatural of the Cossetot.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I wonder if I'll find any like arrowheads or anything out there.
Leave them. You'll find them. You'll find pottery and stuff, but just leave them.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to bring none of that crap home.
No, that's bad mojo, man. You don't want no Indian Navajo skinwalker walking around in your house. You could like get rid of you.
Yeah. Well, if I have any supernatural experiences out there, I'm going to have to tell you about it. That's going to be interesting for sure.
You'd be just like my buddy. I'm not a believer, but I'm going to tell you what happened.
I'm a believer, man. I definitely believe, but it'll be interesting. It's going to be fun out there just on foot.
Yeah. We did catch a lot of good smallmouth on the fly. It was fun. And we weren't nymphing.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I'm gonna definitely every chance I get to walk from the trail to the river, because it's right along it the whole way. If I see any good shoals or anything like that, I'm definitely gonna get a line wet.
So. You'll get some fish, man, especially in November. Well, it's gonna be kind of cool, but you'll have a lot of rain. So the Cossetot is Arkansas's version of the Devils, our western spot. Then there's also the one up northwest Arkansas that goes back into Missouri. What is it? The Kings. Kings is their version. Yeah. But there's more outpoints on the Kings than the Cossetot.
Yeah.
There's only four.
I see. Yeah. So speaking on that, so we're talking about y'all fishing it. So if anybody is listening to this and wants to make that trip, understand there's Class 4, Class 5 rapids on the Cossetot. So, and there's not very many access points. So if you're going to take a watercraft on the Cossetot, make sure you're experienced. If you're just going out there and thinking you're just going to go fishing, it'll be tough. There's some high class rapids, and you need to make sure that you're experienced and prepared. There is good fishing on it because it's not as easily accessible. So a lot of people don't do it, but if you are going to do it, make sure you're experienced. That's why I'm not doing it. Because you got to
get a hold of your local shops that are familiar with the Cossetot. Even the visitor center will tell you when is good and when is not good. You know, it is the whitewater heaven for whitewater boats, kayaks, and rafts. So, I mean, they have a falls called Skull Crusher. And there's a reason why they call it Skull Crusher. It's a high class. But that only happens when there's high volume of water, you know, or rain. Right. Which usually around the fall or early spring, you know, late spring, midsummer, the Cossetot's fine to flow for fish, you know.
Yeah.
So, but it's a beautiful river. I highly recommend anybody do the Cossetot. Do the Cossetot, you know, to see some
I'm,
of the,
I'm excited
the
to
Washita.
Go.
That's the southern end of the Washita. You know, that is a really beautiful stretch. So, I mean, you're going to get into a good hike. That hike that you're going to do is, it's pretty rugged.
Yeah. That's yeah, what I was reading. I'm excited for it.
It's pretty remote too. It's you're yeah. out there. So it's,
yeah, I'm definitely going to make sure that I have everything that I need.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just, there's a, you know, I had a lady that just came in yesterday at the shop and she just killed a bear out that way.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
700
Do y'all have
bear.
Any bear spray at the shop?
How big was it?
700.
God.
But
dang.
That's not, that's it. That's, it was a tag bear. So they had a homing device on it. So she had a call, mm-hmm. Arkansas biologist. She's on Facebook. You know, I'll send you the link. But what's mm-hmm. spooky about that bear is that she shot it with an arrow, by the way, and then it crawled off and died. But she had to go back because she saw the tag, call the biologist so he could send the monitor on it. So they found the name of the bear. It was Daisy. That's the bear's name. Mm-hmm. And then the biologist had the monitor reading thing. It's like, you know, something out of Ghostbusters. This is spooky too. So they went the next morning to go find the bear. So they were tracking the bear and she went pretty far out because it was a gut shot. You know, they found the bear, but they also saw 30 yards away, a big pool of blood. And then another 20 yards before the bear, it's like you find a big pool of blood. And then another 20 yards was 30 yards was another big pool of blood. And then the bear was found about 10 yards away. It was a drag. It was picked up. And then when they lifted over, the whole right bottom side was eaten. Like there was no innards anymore. Yeah. So the biologist said, well, that's, you know, Daisy's a 700 pound bear. Something bigger came and ate this and moved it three times and left it. And they're like,
there's some big ass vultures.
Or it could be this. This is what she told me. Now, she hunts a lot and she's a fisherman, you know, well, angler, fly fisher. And I go, well, you know, what do you think it was? And he goes, she goes, Squatch. Well, the biologist said, I'm not going to say there are bigger bears out here, but there are bigger animals out here. And she's a hunter. And I was like, dude, she's talking about Bigfoot, is it?
Yeah.
He was like, yeah.
Got some Squatches.
Yeah. They're trained. Arkansas Game and Fish and the biologists here cannot say there's Bigfoot here. They cannot. Yeah. Yeah, it's against it. My father-in-law will even say that. He will tell you, like, yeah, there's no Bigfoots here. So, but that's,
dude,
also,
I could see how if he ran into a Bigfoot in the woods, just sitting on a log chatting.
I ain't chatting with that cat, bro. You kill all my
dudes. Get along with Squatch, man.
Yeah, he smells. It probably. I mean, you see those beef jerky commercials? That's what happened.
Messing with Sasquatch.
Offering him a ride, pulling forward. One of the major spots where all the Bigfoot hunters come into in February, they have a big closed off private convention and all the Bigfoot hunters come in here. So it's crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That
if
is
you
want
to
cool
hunt
though.
It, you can go to Oklahoma and actually buy your hunting license for Bigfoot. Cause you know, the Washington.
I saw that they were
Oklahoma.
Doing that last year.
Yeah. They're still doing it. So we got a bunch That's of Oklahoma crazy. Guys come in saying, like, yeah, we're going to go back to Oklahoma and hunt for that Bigfoot. And I'm like, you guys are crazy.
Isn't it like $1 million prize or something like that?
I don't know. Dude, he's the best hide-and-seek game player in the world. So. But you just got to think.
He's better
you know?
Than Waldo.
Yeah, hide-and-seek champion.
You just got to think, out there in the woods, a 700-pound bear, mauled, eating all the innards out in one night. Moved all those times and it wasn't even dragged. There's something bigger than that out there, you know.
Right.
I'm not saying it's Bigfoot. I just like, I don't want to be there when that thing comes around.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
If you can pick up 700 pounds, imagine what it'll do to you.
Oh, dude, I'm a freaking Twix bar. Yeah. Oh, But it should, it'd be a good flow. It'd be a good times out there, you know, less bugs.
I think it
less
will people. Be. And it's going to, yeah, it's going to be, you know, a lot cooler than these past few months also. Oh, I'm so tired of this heat. This cool front we got coming in, I'm excited for. I think we're going to get down to the 20s next week.
Yeah, dude. I'm from Hawaii,
it's
going to
be
man.
Amazing.
I moved away from the Great Lakes to get away from that, and it keeps on getting lower and lower every year. It's nuts, dude. It's nuts. But yeah, we're supposed to get into the 20s next week. It's nuts.
Damn, we're only getting in the 30s. I mean, it's still cold, but
dating, the 20s. I'm still wearing shorts next week. I'm going trick-or-treating in my flip-flops.
That's crazy. Awesome.
Yeah,
I think the high on Halloween Day here is 54.
Yeah, which is cool. I mean, I wear makeup and costumes and stuff, which, you know, don't want to run around sweaty and stuff.
Right, yeah. You're not going to have to worry about sweating it off this year.
Nah. No, just gas up the chainsaw and chase those little boogers around. Hope they drop their Halloween candy.
Right? More candy for you. That's freaking awesome.
I was going to do in dedication to Captain Splenda. You know who that is, right?
Mm-mm.
House of a Thousand Corpses. The clown.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, guys. Get into your horror. Yeah, I was going to do something like
I never knew his name.
Captain Splenda, yeah. So I was going to dress up like him, but my wife's like, no, how? No. That's just too bad. Because I got his t-shirt that says, you know, F a clown. You know, and just lift it off everybody. So, but she's like, no, don't do that. So and I was like,
she's probably
okay.
Just saying no because of his teeth.
Yeah, his teeth and, his raggedy terms. Because when I dress up for Halloween, I play the theme I am. Like one year,
so
Michael
you go
Myers.
Full character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was Texas Chainsaw Massacre before I had kids. You know, last year I did, what did I do? Oh, the Headless Horseman, Ichabod Crane. So I played the whole thing and stuff like that. But, yeah. That's
freaking sweet.
Me. I'm not satanic
old
either.
Spooky hell.
Old spooky hell. That's what my kids call me. Spooky dad. Oh, spooky dad. So, yeah, just to tell you how much I love Halloween, I have over 48 Halloween costume boxes upstairs in my attic, and I have one box of Christmas. And it's a tree with some ornaments. It's already taped on it. Like I pasted it already. Just pop the bumper up and plug it in.
Right. Are you going to decorate your Jeep this year?
Yeah. I always decorate my Jeep. So it always freaks out kids, you know, especially with cops. Cops always look at flash the light to look at me. So I'll definitely decorate my Jeep. I mean, Halloween comes once a year. It's a forgotten holiday, you know. They go to the stores now. Everything moves in from like August, a little bit of a Halloween. Then all of a sudden it's Thanksgiving, Christmas. Yeah.
Dude, Christmas stuff is already out at the stores. I'm like, we were in the Halloween section of Walmart yesterday and there's already Christmas stuff. I was like, what the hell is this?
I know. Dude, here they're putting up Halloween stuff like 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's crazy, man. They always forget about Halloween. And we need that because it's the time of the dead, you know, honor of the dead. We got to honor our dead people.
Right. The way that I see it is like, you know, you got to go through Halloween, let Halloween finish, let it have its glory. And then you get into like your Thanksgiving, your autumn decorations. And then after Thanksgiving, your big Black Friday, and then bam, there should be Christmas stuff. But nope, everybody's like, bam, Christmas right now.
Yeah. In this household, it's Halloween, eat turkey. Halloween, okay, Christmas. You need to stock up on our candy, man. It's freaking nuts, dude. From this time, if you guys fish with me, I'm always going to be sucking on freaking candy, dude. It's nuts.
Yeah, I was at Walmart yesterday, and they got bags of candy in there for $29 for a fucking bag of candy. I was like, what the hell kind of shit is this? $29 for a bag of candy. I started like, I was doing the typical dad thing. I was like, this is ridiculous. Like yelling all out. And Ruth is like, stop. She's like, you're embarrassing. You're talking too loud. I was like, $29 for a bag of candy.
Freaking ridiculous. Well,
I don't get it.
Yeah. At least they're not like my dad, my adopted dad. He used to give out brass to kids. Shells.
Brass? Shells.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Because I was in my dad was a Navy SEAL. So that was his thing. He would go to the range the day before Halloween, unload a bunch of brass, collect all the brass, and all my friends would knock on the door, trick or treat, trick or treat. And my dad would come out with shell casings. He's like, there you go. One cent spent from your government. That's what he used to say. So
that's
yeah.
freaking hilarious.
Now, if you come to my house for Halloween, we give out big old candy bars and stuff like that. And once in a while, we get the really fruitcake people like, my kids are vegan. I'll give them a banana or something.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's nuts. Nuts.
That's freaking awesome. I don't think I've ever been to your house on Halloween. I've just been to your house around Halloween. And I'm like, God damn. Like,
yeah. I keep on telling you, bring your girls over, man. But you got so much stuff going on, dude. So
yeah, we're gonna be out of town this weekend again. So
look at Lane. You, just a traveler. So
yeah, I love going places, man. But we're actually going to Ruth's family's for they're doing their Halloween festivities. You know, the weekend before, so it's gonna be a good time. It's gonna be fun. They're also gonna celebrate her sister's birthday, so it'll be a good time.
So I got one question.
What's that,
Jose? What spooky story do you have?
Dude, I think I've told most of mine, man. I can't think of any more I haven't told. Yeah, I can't think of anything I haven't already said. Do you have any other stuff, Russell?
No, man. I think I'm pretty scary storied out.
Okay, well, I got one for both of you guys.
Let's do it.
Jose, do you have a spin casting rod?
No, I don't.
You don't have a bait caster or a spin caster?
I have a reel that was given to me I haven't used.
Okay. Russell, do you have one?
I do.
Damn, that's all spooky right there, you damn meat fucking
I have a whole closet full of conventional gear that I have not gotten rid of since I've been fly fishermen.
I knew it. It's like, you know, last resort is what they say.
No, I don't even use it. I don't even have it for last resort. It's just there. But my kids use the spin stuff. So, yeah. You know, I have those for that. And then, you know, but I can't even remember the last time that I've used conventional gear. It's been a good while.
So, yeah. So I've sold most of my conventional gear, but I've been thinking about getting into the swim baits, like the big baits. And just messing around with that.
No, dude, scratch all that. That's even scarier than Halloween. Dude, look into musky flies, man.
Oh, I've seen those, man. Nightmare musky flies. Bro, I've been browsing the website. I want to place an order with them. And then Marco. Yeah, I need to. I've only dabbled a little bit. I've done some like reverse bulkheads and things like that, but like 6-inch flies at the biggest. And then Mark was like, dude, I'm going to Bolivia. Or sorry, not Bolivia. He's going to Colombia.
He reached out to me.
Yeah, he told us.
A bunch of vampire flies for
him. Yeah. Yep. He's like, dude, yep. can you tie like big flies? Like, I mean, I only tie flies that I throw, and the biggest I tie is like a 2. I can see what I can do. So I've just been battling, like just messing around with the vibe, seeing what comes up. But yeah, I don't really tie big flies, man.
I just put an order for him for this hooks, because he has to have the saltwater 6-aught hook. It's like that, like huge. And his flies are like 5 inches, you know, vampire flies, you know, and then under. Yeah. And I'm getting ready to tie him for him. But yeah, he reached out to me. He's like, yeah, man, so I'm going to Colombia for Parma and all this stuff and Daba. And I was like, oh, yeah. He's like, you ever fished that stuff? I was like, yeah, I never fished Parma, but I've gotten this other stuff. He goes, I need some flies. I was like, dude, do you realize how big these flies are going to be? And then I joked with him. I was like, well, you know, because he was going to send me money. I was like, don't worry about it, dude. I'll get you covered. Just catch some fish, you know. And I was like, catch some really big fish. And I go, wait a minute. That's all that's in the water. Never mind. Just catch a lot of fish.
So. Yeah, we were fishing with him this past weekend, and we were talking about his trip. and he was talking about flies. We stopped in Living Waters there in Round Rock, and he was looking at all these materials and stuff and some of the flies they had on clearance, and he's like, dude, I don't know if these are gonna work, because I mean they were good sized flies, but they weren't like massive flies. And I was like, dude, Hal ties some freaking awesome flies, some big musky flies and stuff like that. I said, you should reach out to him and see if he can hook you up or if he has any tips, because you know, for those payara and shit like that.
Payara. So he's going to February.
He invited me to go on the trip, but I can't. My bank account ain't going to let me do it.
Oh, dude. But man, for the price that he's going with, it's actually a pretty damn good deal.
Oh, it is. It's a damn good deal for what it is.
Yeah. Just donate one of your kids, dude. That's all.
Hell, somebody will make me pay them to give them one of my kids.
just sell a kidney. You got two of them. You'll be all
right. Right?
Just tell Ruth, you know, babe, just, you know, it's like that $1 million thing. You know, once in a lifetime.
Right. Someday I'll make a trip like that. Can't swing it right now, but someday I'm definitely going to make it happen. Or like if I ever hit the lotto, I'm going to take all of us to Christmas Island. Say screw it.
No. Oh, yeah. Christmas Island's good. Yeah. I did Christmas Island. Yeah. Also, but yeah, Christmas Island's good. But you know what you guys got to do if you want to do a trip? You guys had Bri on a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah. He's going to Cuba.
Oh, he is.
Dirt cheap.
Really? So,
I didn't hear about that one.
Yeah, he's keeping on the down low. But
yeah. But we're just going to throw it out to the world to listen to.
Oh, yeah, I guess. So all those guys in Cuba, look out for a little redhead down there. but he told me the price, and I was like, dude, for real? And I was like, yeah. And I was like, you pay more to go to California than Cuba. And I was like, get out of here, really? Awesome. Yeah, so yeah, sure.
We probably paid more to go to freaking Louisiana then and not catch any fish.
You went last year and you caught fish.
Oh, last year was amazing. 2 years ago was kind of complete opposite, but
you got an alligator.
I caught a largemouth bass. I landed a largemouth bass.
Yeah, only you. Yeah.
It was fun. Yeah. So this last weekend, I was down in Texas and we went to an event called Ironfly for Reel Recovery. So you want to kind of talk about your favorite times of this past weekend, I'll say?
Yeah, man, let's do it. So Russell rolled in on Friday. I rolled into town on Friday as well. So we just caught up, had some beers, whatever. We woke up early Saturday, went fishing at an old place that I hadn't fished in years. Russell hadn't fished since he moved to Arkansas, I think. And we were on a mission to find some Rio Grande cichlids, and we failed. We couldn't find any. But we got into some native quads. We caught some really nice like sunfish and stuff on some like 3-weights, 2-weights. It was a pretty good time, I thought. So we did that in the morning, had some lunch and everything, and then we rolled over to Foss Brewing, which is where the Ironfly event was held. And for those of you who may not know what Rio Recovery is, it's essentially an organization that helps men with cancer at various stages of cancer at that. And so, I mean, typically men are not very good at talking in general, but this allows men, like puts men together who are going through the same stuff and gives them a space to talk. And they have like therapists and things like that to lead discussion, whatever. And then they take them fishing. And so you have fishing buddies and all that stuff. And they help them with, you know, either like showing them how to cast if they, you know, if they're like new to fly fishing, or like, you know, take fish off hooks, whatever the case may be, like they're just there to help. And it's a pretty cool deal. And so this whole thing was specifically to raise money to benefit Rio Recovery. And so they had like live music, they had raffles, and they had auctions, and then they had the Iron Fly competition, which is kind of like Iron Chef meets fly tying. So you have to actually tie two flies, the first being a woolly bugger. Based on how well you tie that, they lump you into a category, and they don't really tell you because they don't want anybody sandbagging or anything like that. They just want you to tie as good as you can. So you tie a woolly bugger, they lump you into a category, and they give you a little box. And inside the box are your mystery materials. And you have to incorporate those two materials in the fly in some way, shape, or form. But there's a whole, like, there's like two or three tables full of materials of, I mean, all shapes, colors, sizes, I mean, everything, synthetics, naturals, whatever. And you can just tie whatever fly you wanted, you know, using all that stuff, which is pretty cool because, I mean, realistically, like your only limitation is your imagination, really. So that's pretty cool, man. I think there's like 30 something participants in the Iron Fly itself. And there are two brackets or two categories. You had your advanced and you had your beginners. And yeah, man, it was a good time. Beer was good. There's a lot of cool people. Met some folks who listened to the podcast. It was a blast. That was pretty much, I guess, my recollection of the whole event.
Didn't you get second place?
I did. Yeah.
You got to let that out, Buster.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to leave it out. I got second place.
Second place in the advanced category.
I
wouldn't even love myself that. I don't even know. Anyways, so I wasn't even registered for the event. Russell registered. And he didn't tell me. He goes, yeah, man, you should do it. I was like, I don't know, dude. I think I'm just going to drink some beer, hang out, whatever. And then Landon from Honey Hole's like, yeah, dude, just do it. And they kept, you know, egging me on. I was like, well, it's for a good cause. It's for real recovery. Why not? So I just don't. And Marco actually signed up, but he didn't even tie because he's like, no, man, I'm gonna look like shit. I was like, dude, no one cares, bro. Let's just tie, man. And so, yeah. But so he donated some money, didn't even tie. And so Russell and I both entered, and I ended up tying like a redfish slider type of fly, I guess. Our two materials were it's like this glow bug yarn, and then the white fiber was like for wings or whatever on like dries or like parachute items or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so all I did was I just used the yarn as the body and then tied that up, and then I wrapped some hackle, tied it in. And then I twisted that white stuff really, really tight and used that as ribbing to kind of go over everything, tied it off. And then I used some rabbit strips, and then I did a really shitty deer hair head because I didn't have any razor blades or nothing, and the scissors would not cut. So the trim job was terrible. But, I mean, it is what it is. I had like 30 minutes to do it too. So I wrapped it up really quick, turned it in, didn't think anything of it. And then when they were announcing the winners, my friend Renee from the San Gabriel Fly Fishers won third, and then I won second. And I don't remember the name of the guy who won first, but he tied a really killer hopper pattern. That thing looked really nice. And in the beginner category, shout out to Ty and Amber. So Ty was on Honey Hole like 2-3 weeks ago. Can't remember how long ago now. Great episode. Friend from Kingsville. His wife or fiance, I can't remember. Sorry, I apologize, guys. But she never really tied until that event. And she placed, and so her first two flies, her first fly was a woolly bugger to get her in. The second fly was a fly that she turned in. And that fly got her second place in the beginner division of the Iron Fly. So that was pretty badass. And then Ty won that that Orvis rod. What was that, 3D? Yeah, Helios 3D, yep. Whatever. That thing was sick. He won that.
It was.
And that was pretty cool, man. So, yeah, they were raffling some really cool stuff. They were doing some auctions for some cool stuff. And then I won a remote designs bag. There's like a special drawing for people who entered in the Iron Fly. Like, just for them, you got a little ticket. Ended up winning a remote design bag. So, can't complain about that.
You want a design bag?
28-liter roll top?
Sorry?
Remote designs?
Yeah. It's a roll top waterproof bag.
Oh, 28 liter, I think it was.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Master Woolly Bugger.
But it was cool. I got a little trophy. And then the first place prizes were these really sick custom belt buckles. They're pretty badass. They look awesome.
They were pretty cool.
They look even better in person. Like the picture looked cool, but in person, they look awesome.
They were pretty sweet. And then the hats they gave were pretty cool too.
Oh yeah, yeah. And when you register, you got like a little goodie bag full of stuff, and they got some Iron Fly hats. So essentially, you pay for a hat, and then you get to kind of like enter in the competition.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. The event was freaking cool, and the beer was really good. They had so many different types of beer. Me and Jose got flights and tried basically every kind of beer they had. I think my favorite one was probably that stout. That stout they had was really good. Their cherry bomb was really good.
Yeah,
their pilsner was really good. They had a jalapeno ale that was really good. I mean, all their beers were just really freaking good.
Yingling or PBRs.
No, it's all their own brewery. Yeah, they're all their own brews.
Yeah. I like the alt beer, or whatever that German.
Yeah,
the German
alt beer is real good.
The German style beer is really good. That's probably my favorite.
They also had an orange one too, right? Was that?
It was that one was a different. It was like a honey orange wheat or something like that.
Yeah, that one was really good too.
That one's good too.
Yeah, good beers. And then they made a video. So the cast of Honey Hole, big shout out to them. I mean, the event was a major success. But they went and they were all fishing buddies and coordinators of the last Real Recovery Retreat that I believe was in New Braunfels, I think. I think it was on the Glod. But they made a video of the event. And it was a really good video. And it was a little bit heart-touching. It was like people looking at you like, I'm not crying, you're crying. You know, it was kind of one of those videos. It was a really great quality video. But just kind of shows what the event's like and what it's for and how it affects those that go in such a positive way. So it inspired me. I think they do some events here in Arkansas, up in North Arkansas. So I'm hoping next year I'm going to be able to register and try to be a fishing buddy out there and do that. But it was, all for a great cause, great event. And it was just a blast. It was a great time. So if they do it again next year, like I highly recommend everybody to go.
Yeah, sick event. And yeah, man, there's if you want to check online, like you can donate, and you can also look at what regions they're offering these like retreats at, in case you want to volunteer, be a fishing buddy or help out in any way. Super cool cause. And I think, like you said, I think next year there's one local to me, fairly local anyway. I think I'm gonna try and help out next year.
Cool.
I think it'll be good. So
yeah. And then I forgot, do you want to talk about our Houston or failed Houston trip?
Yeah. So we went and hit up a bayou and decided that we are going to hit up some urban fisheries and with the hopes of getting on some carp. So we show up. And so the last time I went to this body of water, it was 100 degrees out and I have my kids and I fished maybe a 30-foot stretch of it and it was just too hot for them and I'm gonna make them sit there in the middle of the freaking concrete jungle at 100 degrees. So we left. So when me and Jose we actually met up with his roommate Savi out there as well, and we're like, hell yeah, like we're gonna get on some fish, we're stoked, we're pumped. I'm like, I'm gonna film a YouTube video, which I did get, you know, some footage of both the Saturday morning fishing and Sunday morning fishing. So I might be able to throw a video together for it. But we get out there and we're seeing fish. And I mean, I saw tilapia, smallmouth buffalo, grass carp, mullet, what I believe were pacu. And I was just like, hell yeah, like there's fish everywhere. Like we're bound to catch something. And, you know, we had Rob McConnell on, who wrote the book, Fly Fishing Houston in Southeastern Texas. And he was talking about that specific body of water on our podcast, saying that, you know, if they don't want to play, move on, you'll find another one that will. So we did that. We didn't stay in one area for absolutely too long, but, you know, we spent some time fishing some holes where there was fish, and we moved down and we walked quite a distance. I don't even know how far we walked down, and we casted it so many fish. We casted so many different types of flies. I mean, I was throwing brass hawks and I was throwing carpet bombs. I was throwing Rio Gators, Rio Banditos. At one point there was grassies just coming up and sipping top water. So I started throwing like trout dry flies, just anything to try to get these carp to bite. And dude, we didn't have any luck. And then Jose was walking quite a bit ahead, and I see his rod bent over, and I'm like, hell yeah, Jose got one. And so I put my fly rod down, and I start running towards him, and I wanted to start recording him, and then he pulled out a freaking catfish.
Nice. Yeah, like a little 12-inch channel.
Yeah.
Nice.
And so he caught something, and then he goes further down, and we come around. It was actually the very next bend, and there's a spot where there's some faster moving water. And then the way that the bayou is shaped, so it's concrete walls. We weren't at the naturalized bank. We were at the concrete walls. And then it goes flat, and then there's a deeper channel in the middle. And there was some fish that looked to possibly be smallmouth buffalo and maybe even a mirror carp staying right there close to that edge. And so I was casting upstream from them and letting it drift down to them, and it kept swinging. And I missed a hook set on what I believe was a smallmouth buffalo, and then it swam down into the channel. And I make another cast at what I thought was the mirror carp, and I see my fly line stop, and I was just like, hell yeah. And so I decided I was going to wait a little bit longer because I think I prematurely hook set on the smallmouth buffalo, and I was like, all right, cool. So I waited a little bit, and I went to set the hook, and that fish that I thought was a mirror carp spooked and swam off. And I was like, damn, I missed it. And I start reeling in. And I feel something on my line. I'm like, what the hell's going on? And I bring it up. There's a freaking blue crab. He was trying to eat my brass hawk, and when I went to set the hook, it went straight through his claw. So he's getting pulled up by his claw, and I bring him up, and he pinched the shit out of me with his other claw. So I was holding him from, you know, on the top and bottom from the back, like you're supposed to hold a crab, and he just reached down and got right on my damn pointer finger, and he was on my finger for over a minute. I could not get him to release, and I didn't want to, like, just, like, you know, because I know they'll regrow their claws, but his other claw was already damaged from my hook. Luckily, I was using a barbless hook, so I pulled it out, but it had damaged his hook. So I was like, well, or his claw. So I didn't want to rip off the other claw and leave him defenseless, you know? So I was like, damn. So I just kind of let him pinch. I was like hoping he would just let go. And so I tried to put my hand down on the concrete and let it fall off. Well, he was flipping forward, and I guess he didn't want that. So he started pinching harder. He actually broke the freaking skin on my finger. He was just pinching the hell out of me. And I was like, come on, buddy, let go. And he finally let go. And those are the only two creatures that we landed. So.
Did you want to hear about the white, my trip on the white? I have this one short story about it.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So I went up there for my birthday like I do every year. So. And I called Russell, but he was out of town. He went to the Ironfly.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I had to call Austin, which he's not a bad guy. Kind of family guy-ish, dude. But we went up there, stayed in a really nice lodge, you know, met up with my buddy Kyle, because we do this every year. We're going to do a night float, but the 30-mile-hour winds are coming. So the next morning, we're like, dude, let's just go up to the dam before they shut that down November 1st. I know there's browns up there. He's like, yeah, there's browns. So during weird generation, they went from like 25,000 CFS to 650 under an hour, just like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really kooky. So it was really hard fishing, but those rainbows are everywhere. So we're going up there and I'm spotting browns. I'm throwing big old Sunday specials, like, you know, like side of my hand, articulated flies, game changers, you name it. And these browns are just swapping my fly. They're just coming up. They're not taking it. They're just hitting it, moving it off. I was like, these browns don't want to play. So Kyle goes like, we'll do one more pass. You know, we'll go over where I know they're going to be underneath this ducklet, you know, on the grass. And then we'll try it again. And I was like, all right. So Austin's over there and he's pulling out rainbows because he's a rainbow king, I guess. Anyway, so Kyle's buddies are out there, all his other guide friends, you know, and they're all around and they're like, we're looking for the unicorn because everybody's chasing the browns before they close it down. You know, the browns haven't spawned yet. They're getting ready to. So this is the time to chase them, you know, because they're getting ready to feast. They're getting ready to boogie. So they're all looking around unicorns. They got their clients and stuff. So we go past this rock. I throw my big articulated fly, my Sunday special out there, or PBJ. And I start stripping madly because that's what I'm doing. Just jamming out some DK, you know, dead Kennedys. And all of a sudden, boom, my rod goes, hits hard. My 9-weight bends all the way down to the water. Kyle's like, dude, you got it. He's on the oars. He's backing it up, you know. He slides his anchor down. All the guides around him are saying, like, he's got the unicorn, dude. He's got the unicorn. I'm fighting this fish. I'm seeing bright brown just flash down there. I'm like, this is the 32, bro. This is it. This is it. It's digging hard. It's getting that current. Kyle grabs the net. He goes, all right, pull its head up. I couldn't see because I was standing further back on the boat. He was in the front, you know. Scoops it up with the net. Drops the net because he has one of those long nets, you know. And he goes, only you fucking Hal. Only you. And Austin's like, dude, what do you get? What do you get? It's like, it's a big brown. And I'm like, what do you mean only me? And he pulls out this freaking walleye. The walleye was, hold on, let me see if I can do this real fast. Ah. It was like that. I got the picture.
It was a pretty nice walleye.
Yeah.
I didn't even know there were walleye in that river. That's crazy.
Well, the funny thing is, we get back to the lodge. All the guys are talking about, you're the one that caught the unicorn of the day, brother. I don't care what all the other clients are talking about. And another guy goes, the last person who caught a walleye up there on the white was in 2017 with a fly. And I was like, well, I would catch it. And Kyle's like, he catches all the weird fish. So, but yeah, it was nuts. A freaking walleye. But it was good times, man. It was good times. We missed you.
That's
guys.
Freaking
you guys,
awesome.
You guys got to come up next October.
So, dude, we need to. I need another trip to the Wyatt. And for those of y'all who don't know, Hal's kind of the one that got me into fishing for the weird species. When I first moved up here, he was one telling me about pickerel and walleye and stuff like that. And I love it. Like, I freaking love fishing for the weird stuff.
Dude,
the
red horse suckers. So bad.
Come on. Dude, it's about that time.
Come on, man. It's about that time. They're about to start getting ready.
I know. Field work, bro. I got field work.
I know. Well, if you get a break, come up. Even if it's a one-day trip, I will get you on some pickerel.
Yeah, dude, we'll see just come on out. You're the koi master, man. You can catch a pickerel.
That was more dumb luck than anything.
That's good luck, dude.
Yeah, there was some skill to it, man. You had to drop it right on its face. You had to fight it through all the weeds. There was a lot of skill involved in landing that koi.
That was fun, though, man. That was a good trip. That was actually the same trip that we went to the White on.
Yep.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, Russell was cleaning shop with the cutties and the browns and everything, nymphing, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Austin was good nymphing. Times, though.
I mean, if you ain't catching nothing else and you're paying somebody. Speaking of which, he was talking about Kyle. So Kyle's the guide that we had up there as well. So his name's Kyle Bogart, and he owns Eddie Line Fly Fishing. Is that what his guide
Eddie
service
Line
is called?
Drift Flies.
Yeah. And I mean, he'll definitely get you on some fish. I'll put his a link in the description, but he'll definitely get you on some fish if you're in the area or if you're coming through the area. Definitely go. He'll take you out to the White and put you on some fish. So we'll plug that shamelessly. Like, go check him out. But other than that, man, we're kind of coming up on time. So is there anything else either one of y'all want to cover before we go ahead and start closing this out?
Eat a lot of candy for Halloween.
Right. Yep. Definitely gonna have to do that. But we appreciate you coming on. How it was great.
Anytime.
Always. Yes, sir. Well, we appreciate you coming on. We appreciate the stories, and we'll get out there and get on some fish soon. And for those of y'all that are listening, thank y'all for making it to the end, and we'll catch y'all next time.
This has been Wildlife Outdoors. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Facebook at Wildlife Outdoors and on Instagram at wild.life.outdoors. Let's go live life on the wild side.